But one thing she did say, you know, talk to my mom is, I know Barry's an asshole, but he was my asshole. You know what I mean? You know. So,
yeah.
And I mean, that kind of sums it up right there. You know what I mean?
I came from the mud. There's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree. There's roots where I stand. Oh, I've been running from the law. Hope they won't shoot me down soon. Catch me howling at the moon. Try to catch me howling at the moon. Try to catch me howling at the moon. Try to catch me howling at the moon.
One of the things we're committed to doing on this podcast for Barry Zeldin is establishing a fact-based timeline of events based off of police reports and witness reports. So today what we're going to do is we're going to recreate Barry's movements on the 7th of October 2013, the last day that Janet could verify his whereabouts. So we use the police report and we're anchoring it off of his sign-in at the Audubon Hunting Club at 9:50 a.m.
So we know that is fact from the documents that he signed there at the club. It also lines up with the facts we know from the police report, from the conversations with Janet, as well as some of his movements that we could factually track based on various elements that the police were able to identify. So we know that Janet is telling us that at 9 o'clock in the morning, he walked into the bedroom and said, "Hey, hon, I'm off to the Audubon Gun Club. I'm going to go bait the deer stand."
And we start out in Mays Landing, New Jersey. Barry is wearing that day jeans, a T-shirt, and a flannel shirt of undetermined color. He probably does not have the flannel shirt on at that point because it's 66 degrees, but he probably has it with him in case it gets a little chilly. Barry also had a gold wedding band, and he was wearing a gold chain with two large charms, and they are large, of a marlin and a soft pretzel. He also had white sneakers.
So his first stop is at the Wells Fargo ATM there in Mays Landing. We know that it is a 5-minute drive from his home to the ATM. It's approximately 2.3 miles, and it is a verifiable point that at least his ATM was used at that ATM at 9:06, according to the records from Wells Fargo, which lines up really well with what Mrs. Zeldin was telling the police officers.
Right. So Barry is 5'7", 165 pounds. He's got brown hair, brown eyes. He's got a brown and gray beard. And he is at the Wells Fargo getting out his $140 allowance for the week at 9:06 a.m.
So the next point in time that we have at least a witness verification of time is his arrival at Mr. Patton's house on Lake Oswego Road. So this is a location that he stored a vehicle, I believe, and Mr. Patton's response to the police officer was that he was there somewhere between 9:30 and 10 o'clock.
So what Barry does here is Barry takes his bait, everything that he has with him, including Taffy the dog, and he transfers that from the Ford Edge, the cream-colored Ford Edge, to a vehicle that the family lovingly referred to as the Green Slime. It was a 1992 Chevy Blazer. It was green two-tone. And this is the vehicle that Barry used to hunt with. It was a four-wheel drive vehicle, and a lot of hunting in Jersey is done on the dirt roads. So it's very important to remember that Barry remembers to transfer everything over to this vehicle, including the buckets of potatoes, the other food that he's going to set out. He transfers the compasses over, his cell phone, all that other good stuff. It's very important to remember that for later on in the timeline. So that's where Barry makes the transfer from one vehicle to another. he and Sonny have a conversation out at the picnic table, and then Barry is back on his way. Barry basically met Sonny by going up and down Lake Oswego Road, which is another important point to remember, because when you come out of the Hunt Club and you make a left, you go up the road a little bit, about 50 seconds up the road, and Lake Oswego Road is off to your right. But you can't see Mr. Patton's property from there. You have to actually travel down Lake Oswego Road. And at some point that Mr. Patton said was probably about 8 years before that, Barry had knocked on Mr. Patton's door and said, hey, you have a nice property here. Do you mind if I leave my vehicle here? Because I have a four-wheel drive vehicle that I use for hunting. It's a very bold move, a very forward move. But according to Hunt Club members that I've interviewed, that's something that Barry would do.
Yeah, it sounds like Barry. So,
and the payment for that service would be, he would, bring Mr. Patton some alcohol on occasion. He would bring him some food, something along those lines. So it was kind of like a friendly little thing.
Yeah, so it was an informal arrangement. There was no rent. There was no concerns about that. The guy just said, hey, can I leave my truck here? I'll bring you a case of beer, a bottle of whiskey, pizza and cake.
Important thing to remember about that is, how did he come across the property in the first place? He must have driven past it at some point, right? So that's kind of what...
And that's what Patton indicated to the police officers. And it is definitely on the path between the Audubon Gun Club and the FAA Tower Road if you're going the dirt roads through the Pinelands.
Right, which is going to become key here in a minute. So Barry gets back in his car.
And we know that he leaves Mr. Patton's and he goes to the gun club, which is a whopping 52 seconds away. We found it also to be 52 seconds. Google Maps says it's 52 seconds, which is interesting that we both were right on that 52-second mark. But anyway, it's about a half a mile away. So he went south to the Audubon Gun Club. He signed in and he made the statement that he was going to bait the stands on the sign out log, and he specifically signed the log at 9:50. So if we walk back through the timeline real quick, just to remind everybody, at 9 o'clock he's at home, at 9:06 he's at the ATM. That makes sense. It's 2.3 miles in between. Somewhere around 9:45 he's at Patton's. Also makes sense because it's approximately 22 miles or 31 minutes between the two. And then it's about a minute to the gun club. So 50 elapsed minutes, driving minutes, it's approximately 37 to 38 driving minutes. Right. So all of that timeline makes sense.
And he told Mr. Patton, I'm going to feed the babies. And, we thought about, why wouldn't Barry leave a vehicle on the hunting club grounds? But when you go to Audubon Hunt Club, it is a very tree-lined road out in front of it. And there's only a small driveway to get up. It's one lane wide. So I'm thinking maybe he wouldn't want that vehicle stored there at night with nobody be able to watch it. He was probably thinking that Mr. Patton could also keep an eye on it on his property a little better.
So I think one of the things we could do is verify with the president of the gun club if they had rules about leaving vehicles there when they weren't there too.
Definitely good follow-up question.
Yeah, so that could be another option. So the next thing we know that we can verify is that the president of the gun club called Barry Zeldin at about 10 o'clock, and Barry Zeldin stated that
this is Bill Swales. Yeah. And this is new information. I just interviewed Bill the other day, and Bill indicated to me that he had called Barry that day. It's not written up in a police report, and Bill says that he called him at 10 o'clock, and Barry said the same thing, that he told Mr. Patton he was going out to feed the babies.
All right. So then getting to the last fact that we know from the gun club to FAA Tower Road, which is where his vehicle was found, is 10 miles. That is a fact that we know.
That's correct.
So we know that 5 days later and 10 miles from where he was last verifiably seen, they find his vehicle. In reviewing the police reports, we also found another interesting fact. We know as a fact, based on cell phone records from Verizon, there was a request by the police to do a ping history on his cell phone. What we know as a fact is that the telephone pinged at the Lake Oswego location three times for 3 days, on Monday the 7th, Tuesday the 8th, and Wednesday the 9th. morning of. We know it was pinging around the Lake Oswego area. We know that on the afternoon of the 9th and on the 10th, it was pinging at his home in Mays Landing. So when they investigated why that would be, he had purchased a new cell phone, and the new cell phone ran out of battery approximately on that Wednesday, and his old cell phone started pinging on that Wednesday afternoon once his new cell phone was no longer operational.
Yeah, and I think going forward, it's going to be important to remember that Barry doesn't seem to be the type of guy who would forget things. He goes and gets a new cell phone on Saturday, and that's probably because he knows the importance of having a good cell phone out in the woods. You know, Barry's been out in the woods before. He's gotten that that cell phone to save him prior because he got lost one other time out there, and he used his cell phone to get out. So I think it's important that we're establishing that he's remembering to transfer bait. He's remembering to transfer taffy. He's remembering to transfer compasses. We know that he had a hunting knife with him. Janet said that when they went to Barry's house, his gun safe, they could not originally access. But both hunt club members that I've talked to so far have said that at that point, Barry was definitely carrying a gun around with him. So chances are he would have remembered to transfer that as well.
So as far as facts go, we know that the last time his cell phone pinged, his new cell phone pinged, was at Lake Oswego, which is about 3 miles from Mr. Patton and the Audubon Gun Club, and on the way towards FAA Tower Road. We know that 5 days later, his car was found 6 miles away from Lake Oswego on FAA Tower Road.
Yeah, here's the thing. Today, I was fully prepared to come here and tell you guys, you know, Barry, the soonest his car could have been out in that area where it was recovered was 10:30 on that day. Now I can't say that.
No, the soonest we could say verifiably that the vehicle was in that space was would be on Thursday.
Correct.
Because we know on Wednesday morning it was at Lake Oswego, 6 miles away.
Right. Why, if he was going to Warren Grove directly, is it pinging at Lake Oswego on Monday, Tuesday, the morning of Wednesday?
I think this is about like when we drove out to where his car was found. The only thing that has happened up to this point is we have more questions than answers.
So after getting the police report and contact the many witnesses that were mentioned in it, we got a call back from one of Barry's friends this week from the marina where he stored his boat. And this is our interview with him. This gentleman's name is Kurt.
Hello?
Hey, Kurt. It's Mike McGuire. How
Hello.
Are you? Do you have a few minutes to talk or?
Yeah.
Okay. In the state police report, it looks like you contacted those guys because you were concerned about a conversation that Barry had with you, right? Would that be fair to say? Like you got in touch with
no.
them? Oh, okay.
No, I did get in touch with them. And what had me concerned is I went to work in the morning and that's when I found out about Barry. You know, there was customers there talking about it.
Right.
There's one gentleman that works with us. His name is Bob. He told me a story about the game warden. So I said, Bob, you should tell about this story. You know what I mean? Because it sounds important.
Yeah.
And Bob didn't want to say anything. So I made the call, talked to the trooper, and then I guess the trooper investigated it and never got back to me, and I never heard anything from it.
Yeah. Yeah, they
now,
didn't.
Now, the deer stands, I heard that from Barry, you know, over the years of sitting in the office, you know.
Right.
Shooting the crap with them.
Yeah. I guess he must have had his boat in that marina. Is that what it is?
Yes. My parents at the time ran the marina, and I did mechanical work on his boat.
Oh, okay. Okay. Was he good? You know, I'm trying to get a feel for what type of guy he was because, you know, the way the state police are kind of painting it in the report is that he was the type of guy who goes around, you know, like purposefully getting in arguments with hunters and game wardens. It's kind of, if you read this report, that's kind of what they're trying to say. But, you know, the family paints a different picture. The family's like, you know, he was a really good guy. He was a, you know, just a family guy. What, you know, you, what sense do you get out of it? What, you know, what do you, what's your impression of the guy?
Now, me growing up at the marina, I get to hear all these old timers, okay, growing up.
Right.
You know, you get cops, you get Vietnam vets, you get, so you hear all these different kind of stories, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, to me, the story that Barry was saying, it was like action figure-like, you know what I mean? Like, things that, now, he told us he used to be a cop. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, you know, he would tell all kinds of stories. To me, it was, I don't know.
Yeah,
he didn't rub me the wrong way, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or anybody has to breathe the wrong way, but he talked like he would always, like, looking for trouble, like you're saying, you know?
And that's kind of what the other members of the hunting club kind of alluded to with the cops, you know? They said at some point he was walking around saying, hey, I'm going to take my chainsaw for a walk. And I'm going to, you know, take down some of these deer stands. So, you know, that's helpful to me. It really is. And actually the information you gave me last night too, about him having a confrontation with a game warden at a gate, that when you go out to the site where his car was found, that makes a ton. Right. It makes a ton of sense. Yeah. When you go out to the place where the Blazer was found, where he had a Chevy Blazer. He parked it on a road that's really wide, and he had one deer stand there. It was like 75 yards away. But if you keep, if you keep walking northwest there, you come through to another road, right? It's the road that's next to FAA Tower Road. And when you come through to that road, there's actually a really narrow little lane, you know, like a road, and there's two gates right there. Like you, there's nowhere to park without blocking the gates is what I'm trying to say. Right. So if he had his other stand in there, and he tried to, you know, drive over to it to lay bait, the problem would be he'd be blocking the gates. Now, what's even more interesting, and I'll send you a picture when we get off the phone, is at that spot where those two gates are, there is a white rock on the ground. Somebody took a rock home and painted this huge rock. Then there is a gazing ball. You know what a gazing ball is? It's like those mirror balls that people have in their gardens. So there's like this big gazing ball. It's the size of a basketball. And it comes up and it's attached to a stick, right, a holder. And it says, fuck you on it. Dude, when I saw it, my blood ran cold in the middle of the wood. And I get out of the car and there's a friggin' rock on the ground. Would have fuck you on a gazing ball. So it makes me wonder, did he put it there? Did, you know, whoever did something to him put it there after the fact? Like, you know, it's almost like somebody's arguing with somebody about that spot.
Right.
But it makes sense that he would have two deer stands in Warren Grove for the different ways the wind's blowing. Like, you'd have to be there to see. But, you know, it makes sense, me being there several times to take a look at it, that he might have had two over there. But here's the problem. When they found his car, the bait was still in the car. His cell phone was still in the car. His wallet was still in the car. The dog was still in the car. His keys were in the car. It basically looks like, you know, he got to the spot, got out of the car, and was confronted by somebody and never actually even got a chance to go bait his deer stands.
Right. You know,
that's what it looks like. And here's the other problem. The state police never fingerprinted the vehicle. And they actually gave it to his son-in-law's, or his son and his son-in-law, to drive around back there to look for him. So that ruined any chance of, you know, doing any fingerprinting on it or anything. So, you know, why would he park this vehicle, you know, why would he park his vehicle and then forget to take, you know, the bait with him? You know, you get out of the car, you start walking, and you're like, oh, shit, I don't have the bait. So you walk back and you grab it, you know?
Yeah, but did he have his bow with him?
His bow was home, and the only thing that he took with him was a hunting knife. So he wasn't going to hunt that day. We know that for sure.
He took a what? A gun with him?
No, just a hunting knife. His gun.
A hunting knife.
Yeah, his gun and his bow were both still home. So that, you know, that's why this whole thing.
If he was in the deer stand, I mean, he would have his bow. You know what I mean? There's exactly. No reason to sit in your stand with no bow.
No. It's really a crazy case, man, because, too, if you drive out there, I mean, I just did a video. I put it up online of me driving in from, like, the last house to where his stand is. It's only, like, right. 300 yards in, man. So, like, for him to get disoriented and lost... First of all, it's like a checkerboard pattern back there, trails and roads. I mean, you know, you can't walk very far through the bush without coming to a road or a trail. And all you really got to do is walk due east and you come back to civilization. It's up there near Lucille's Cafe up on 539. It's a very popular spot. Warren Grove is, you know, there's a huge FAA there's FAA Tower Road. There's this big, huge tower the FAA has out there. That's probably 7 stories high. So,
right.
And the pine trees out there are pygmy pines. They're only like six foot tall. So if you look in any direction, you can see the FAA tower. And that tells you to walk back towards it and walk back east. So what the family's thinking and what we're thinking as we get further along in this thing is that, you know, on the day of the 7th, when he left his buddy's house with his, you know, blazer and got out there, he got confronted by somebody. So our theory is that he got in some kind of confrontation. And that's why I was asking if you thought you think he's a confrontational guy. Did he ever talk to you guys about the hunting club itself? Did he have any arguments there or?
You know, no, he never said he had any problems with the hunting club. Okay. The only problem that I heard him say was with that game warden, you know what I mean?
Right.
And
never mentioned the name, right?
No.
Okay.
No. He said his game warden really gave him a ration of shit, you know what I mean?
Right. Did he say it got physical or anything?
Didn't say it got physical, but...
Okay.
Now, what I hear from Bob, now Bob passed away also, I heard he... You know, was going to bring a freaking gun out there. Now, that's a story I heard from Bob. But I swore I was at, and this was a while after he's been missing, and Mrs. I don't know if it's family owned down there, so it's son, you know, the father, but the wife worked at the desk. I was getting parts, and I don't know if one of the daughters were there at the time also, but she was like, you know, have you heard anything from Barry? And I looked at her and I said, what do you mean Barry? He goes, the guy was listening out of the pilot. And I said, well, how do you know him? And she goes, well, he come in here for parts before, you know, right before he passed away or went missing. She said, you know, I want to contact. I said, you should contact. Like, these people are... I don't know why I'm scared to contact, you know what I mean? Just to,
right.
To say what Daddy said, you know what I mean? But she was like, I said, well, you should, you know, contact a trooper or something. And I don't know if she did or not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll give her a call and see if she has anything, you know, she'd like to tell me instead of a cop, you know, a lot of times that, you know, helps.
Because it was about the same story. Like he was telling down at our marina that he told there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and if he's telling it at both places, then it must have
about
been...
About his being aggressive with this game warden and having troubles with the game warden. He definitely kept saying it was a white vehicle, you know, an SUV or truck or a Blazer or something.
Yeah, if it was it was
definitely white.
Yeah, it could have been either one then. It could have been park police. It could have been a game warden. I had to check it out. But it's interesting that he told it at both spots. I agree.
I mean, When I talked to the trooper, and as soon as I said it was game, you know, like I called and I told him about the deer stand, and then I started telling him about the game warden. As soon as I said game warden, he dismissed it. Like, you know, there's no way in hell that there could be a bad game warden out there, you know.
Sure.
And that's how I took it, and that was the end of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
By the end of the day, I never heard anything else from this trooper.
I got to be honest with you. I can actually send you what they wrote about you. I will. I'll send you a couple pages of it. I mean, I think it's on two pages. But
Barry was a good customer. I mean, he would come out right before hunting season. He was like the first customer that would pull his boat. You know what I mean? And
right.
We do everything to the boat, never had a freaking problem with him. And he was the first one to go in. I know he loves hunting and he loves fishing. And I mean, he would call the deers his babies. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I got to get the boat out. I'm going hunting. I want to go get my babies. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Said that to everybody.
That damn dog never left that dog never left his side down there. I mean, he used to tell stories that he would take the dog up in the tree stand with him.
Yeah, that was the other problem. The dog was still in the car or still in the truck. You know, I don't think he would have got out of the truck without taking the dog with him. Dog's still alive, by the way.
Is it? I mean, yeah. The wife came down, you know, I don't know if it was 6 months after that happened, and she did bring the dog down with her.
What, did you have any interaction with her, or did she go out with him a lot, or, like, it was mostly him just fishing?
On the boat, it was him. He had I don't know if he chartered boats, because he had a younger kid that used to be a mate, you know what I mean? He was training him to be a mate to go fishing with him. And actually, I met the kid's father probably last year or this year, and we were bullshitting. And I never seen a wife on that boat ever, you know?
Okay. Yeah, was there anybody would go with him?
I know when she came down to the marina, you know, she was upset. And she was talking to my mom, and you know, we're trying to help her out with selling the boat. Now, I don't sell boats. You know, we don't have any way to finance any of that stuff. I said, so I shipped her to a marina that's on the Black Horse Pike that sold boats. So I don't know if they ever sold her or not. But one thing she did say, you know, talk to my mom is, I know Barry's an asshole, but he was my asshole. You know what I mean? You know. So,
yeah.
And I mean, that kind of sums it up right there. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, it does.
He would come in and sit in the office and shoot the crap, and there'd be other customers. And I never had any customers say like bad things about him or anything, you know?
Right.
He told, you know, I'd say like action filled stories. You know what I mean? Right. And I mean, when you're at a marina, you know, a lot of things are fish stories. You know what I mean? But,
right.
You know, he went above and beyond with some of his stories. You know what I mean? So.
Oh man, that's good. Do you remember a particular one?
Yeah, he kept saying that. I don't know if he had a place in New York or Pennsylvania, and somebody was giving him trouble up there. And I don't know if the guy burned his cabin down or if he burnt the guy's cabin down.
Yeah, that's a pretty good action figure story, right?
Yeah. And he was supposed to have been a cop at that time. So, you know, was he a cop?
I can't find anything that says he was anything other than the owner of a pretzel stand at Rice's Market up in Bucks County. Look, no matter how much of an asshole the guy was, he didn't deserve what he got, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
His grandson has stage 4 colon cancer. He's still wondering about his pop. You know, that's just terrible that this kid has no resolution on this whole thing. We got to establish the timeline, right? Because he goes missing on the 7th and they don't find the truck till the 12th. So what happened on the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, right? And like one of the things you could have found out was the dog was in the truck supposedly from the 7th until the 12th. So I asked the family, I asked the state police, I asked everybody, you know, if the truck was actually sitting there for 5 days, there should have been maybe 5 or 6 bowel movements. There should have been, you know, a whole bunch of pee in the back of it. You know, how much of that stuff was in there? Well, I don't know. We didn't know. We didn't look. We didn't know. You know, and my thought process is, you know, if it was somebody like a park cop or a game warden or something along those lines, and they staged this whole thing. They may have got rid of him and got rid of the truck, you know, temporarily, put it somewhere else until they can figure out where to put it. and then maybe brought it back that Friday before it was found on Saturday. And maybe they had the dog the whole time too, you know? So that's what I was interested in. Like, how many, you know, it's a weird question, but how many of these bowel movements are in the back of this blazer? Because if that dog was sitting there, and what happened was it busted the molasses and corn open, and it was eating the molasses and corn to stay alive and drinking rainwater out of the cup holders because it was raining and pouring. So, you know, it wasn't dehydrated. It still would have been making bowel movements, especially with corn and molasses. And nobody knows.
What about pinging the phone? You hear all these things about pinging the phone to trace where he was at or anything.
His phone was on the, here's another thing. His phone was on the, it was in the center console and the battery was dead. Here's another weird one. So he has this guy, he had a Ford Echo, right? That he drove, and then he drove that up to this guy, Sonny Patton's house up near Chatsworth. And this place is like about a minute from the hunting club. So he had to sign in a hunting club. But apparently this guy just left him keep his hunting vehicle on the guy's property. So when the police questioned him, he was like, I don't really know the guy. I'm not really that friendly with him. You know, I just let him, he's not that friendly with him, but he lets him keep his truck on his property.
Right.
That doesn't add up either, right? So, yeah, there's a lot of things about this that don't add up. So, but when he was he like a loner as far as fishing goes? Did he have a lot of family members come with him? Did he just, you know, did he have any friends that you can think of that went fishing? Did any other friends at the marina?
No.
Okay.
The best question they have had to is that, and his wife has to know, you know, the first mate's name. I can't think of his name. I mean, he had to be 12 or 13, you know, I'm thinking back then, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that kid fished every freaking day with him, never left the side, you know what I mean?
And they never questioned that kid because there is no record of anybody else besides. I mean, really, they didn't question too many people, man. They questioned you, your mom, Barbara. They have Sonny Patton in here. They have a couple members of the hunting clubs, you know, and that's it. I mean, like maybe five or six witnesses were questioned. So, yeah, I mean, it would be really helpful to find that kid, maybe talk to that kid and see what he has to say about the whole thing. So, you know, if you can recall his name, you know, let me know and I'll track him down. I'm sure he has a Facebook or whatever.
Like I said, I was standing in line at West Marine and I had my Smith Marina shirt on. And his father was behind me, and he was like, is you from Smith Marina? I'm like, yeah. And he said, do you know Barry? And I'm like, yeah, Barry was a customer of mine. And he said, my son used to be his mate for fishing. I said, I remember your son. And I asked him, I said, what's your son doing now? And he's working somewhere, and freaking I forget where the hell he's working at.
That's okay. I can probably find out.
I'm looking for a dock hand, you know what I mean? And the kid was cool back then when he was 12, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think now he's like 20 or 21, you know what I mean? And I said, listen, I said, your son ever needs a job, I said, ship him my way because, you know, I could use a good dock hand.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
His wife would definitely have to know the kid's name because...
Yeah, I'll ask her.
I believe the kid also was in that same condo unit. That's how they got hooked up. You know?
Okay. Yeah, that would have been over in Ocean City, right? Yeah, the condo we had at Ocean City. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you play the podcast, maybe the mate will hear it and come talk to you, or maybe Corky's wife will make a phone call.
Exactly. I got fascinated with this whole thing. And, you know, we're just doing this separate podcast. I got in touch with his daughter-in-law, and his daughter-in-law is super cool. You know, so I'm kind of helping her out, and just trying to raise awareness, man. You know, I honestly think if we went back out into the woods, we're not going to, what are you going to find at this point? You're only going to find a skull, right? So, you know, it makes no sense to go hunting out in the woods for him now, but I don't ever actually think he was in the woods. You know, I don't think he made it there.
I mean, like my theory was he was hunting in the, you know, heart attack or something in the stand.
Right.
And
he's up there and nobody can freaking see him. You know what I mean? And
right.
Like you're saying, one day they're going to find a skeleton. But the fact that he left his bow at the house, there ain't no way he should be in a freaking deer stand without a bow. You know what I mean?
Right. And then the cadaver dogs, too. You know, if that happened, the cadaver dogs would have caught on to a scent.
The two theories I got is the deer stand or he's in the freaking Kroger and drinking margaritas right now. You know what I mean?
So. Could be. You know, I can tell you that he hasn't accessed any of his funds, hasn't used any of his credit cards, hasn't used any of his debit cards since that day. If he's doing that, he's doing it on some money. He hid away really well.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I really appreciate you talking to me. If you think of anything else, you know.
No, I mean, hopefully you put that on there and somebody listens to it and gives you a call. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
I never met with a cop.
Yeah, I think they met with your mom, right, Barbara? Oh, they actually say they went down to the marina. Who knows? Maybe. Yeah. You know. I'll tell you another funny thing.
I talked to him on the phone. That's about all. I don't believe I ever sat down in front of an officer and talked to him. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, right now we have another friend, and he went missing in the Caribbean. He went over there to the Virgin Islands to go rebuild or something when that Bahamas hurricane hit.
Right.
And the company that he went down there with, those guys all returned, and he's never returned yet.
Jesus so, Christ. Really?
I had his family members message me, like, any of your friends hear from him? And it's a mess.
Well, I really appreciate it, man. If you think of anything else that, you know, I could possibly use, or if you think of that kid's name, you know, just send me a message and, you know, we'll go down that road. And I really appreciate your help, man. I'll definitely pass along to the family how helpful you were.
All right.
Appreciate
it. Mark.
Take care. Bye. And I'm happy to report that Kurt's friend did eventually turn up. He found the guy.
Isn't that crazy though, to be a person with two people missing in your world?
Yeah. We didn't need another case.
Right. Glad they found him.
We got our hands full with this one. So every once in a while, as you guys know, a lot of you listen to Wicked Garden Podcast, we have a paranormal podcast. And the paranormal investigation team that we have over there has been kind enough to help us out with things that are going on with this case. Those guys are great. One of the members there is Marie Bouchetourelle. And Marie is what we would call gifted. She gets information from the other side on occasion. So something crazy happened with her, and we're going to take you guys through that. I actually sent an email to Deb Zeldin back on December 18, 2019 at 12:01 p.m., and I'm going to read it to you. Hi, Debbie. Happy holidays to you and your family. Oprah requests were sent today to New Jersey State Police for all the info collected in their investigation. We are also working on establishing a no BS fact-based timeline. P.S. Does the name Gabby, Gabriel, or Gabriella ring any bells with regards to Barry's case? Could also possibly be a nickname Gabby. This is something my side people are insistent about currently. Thank you.
So for those of you who are like me who don't know what side people are, they're into it. It's like Marie. So Marie was very insistent that we ask Debbie this question. On the 28th of December, Debbie responded to Mike's email. She said, Mike, I'm so sorry I haven't responded to you. I haven't been on email at all. I will work on getting that list of people and numbers to you. I don't recall anyone by that name, but I will ask Glenn.
So Debbie never really did get back to me. She never did get a chance to ask to Glenn. And then after Kurt's interview and we heard about the first mate, I asked Debbie if she knew what the first mate's name was, and she did get back to me. And here's my call to Marie. Hey.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
So I wanted to give you a call because Deb Zeldin got back to me with the name of that kid who was helping Barry out on the boat. The guy Kurt was talking to us about. And the kid's name is Gabe.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
It is. Because that is exactly what you alluded to with her in an email back on December 18th.
Was it December 18th? I couldn't remember.
Yeah. At December 18th, we asked her, just as an aside, in an email I asked her, I said, is there a Gabriella, or could be a nicknamed Gabby. And right. she said, no, it doesn't right. ring a bell.
And she was going to ask her husband.
Right, which she never did. And then Kurt, you know, in his conversation the other day, was telling us about this young kid that was on Barry's boat. And if we could get a hold of him, he might be able to help us out. Sure enough, I ask her the question and she gets back to me and the kid's name is Gabe.
How about that? I'm never wrong. Mike, you know me for a long time. I'm never wrong. When I, when Marie talks, it's gospel.